everyone.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Susan Shand and I will tell you about the availability of COVID-19 vaccines in Asia.
Testing results have shown that experimental vaccines from Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, and AstraZeneca are safe and effective in preventing coronavirus infection. Countries including Britain, Canada, the United States, and the European Union have approved or are expected to approve these vaccines for emergency use. In Asia, several countries have also started their own review process and signed agreements for a supply of the shots.
In Australia, the government has agreed to buy 140 million doses, including 53.8 million from AstraZeneca and 10 million from Pfizer. The country also expects to get 51 million from Novavax and 25.5 million through COVAX, a vaccine program run by the World Health Organization. The country expects to receive 3.8 million shots of AstraZeneca's vaccine early in 2021, and it hopes to begin its vaccination program in March.
China's government has already vaccinated 1 million people under emergency use with 3 different local vaccines. The experimental shots are developed by Sinovac Biotech and state-owned China National Pharmaceutical Group, Sinopharm. The government does not have supply agreements with Western drug makers, but the drug makers have partnered with private companies to supply the shots in China. AstraZeneca is working with Chinese partner Shenzhen Kangtai Biological Products to make at least 1 million shots yearly starting at the end of 2020. The companies are hoping for approval in China by the middle of 2021. Chinese company Fosun Pharmaceutical Group is working with Pfizer and BioNTech. Tibet Rhodiola Pharmaceutical Holding, another Chinese drug maker, is testing Russian vaccine candidate Sputnik V.
Japan has agreements to buy 120 million doses from Pfizer-BioNTech in the first 6 months of 2021. It will also buy 120 million from AstraZeneca, which will ship the first 30 million shots by March 2021. In addition, Japan has a deal for 250 million shots from Novavax and is in talks with American company Johnson & Johnson. Experts said vaccine makers will need to conduct more tests in Japan before seeking approval for emergency use.
South Korea has agreements to buy 20 million doses each from AstraZeneca, Pfizer, and Moderna. It also has a deal for 4 million from Johnson & Johnson, enough to cover up to 34 million people. South Korea is looking for additional shots through the WHO's COVAX program. Vaccination is likely to start after March of 2021 to give health officials more time to observe possible side effects.
The head of the Serum Institute of India, which makes the AstraZeneca vaccine, said on November 23rd that it will seek emergency use by the end of 2020. The drug maker plans to seek full approval for the shots in February or March of 2021. India expects to launch a government-backed vaccine in February and is testing Russia's Sputnik V vaccine.
Taiwan aims to get about 15 million doses through COVAX to begin its vaccination program. The territory plans to buy another 15 million doses from other drug makers. The government has said it hopes to begin vaccinations between January and March of 2021.
Malaysia has agreed to buy 12.8 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine. It is the first country in Asia to announce a deal with the U.S. drug maker. Other Southeast Asian countries have expressed worries about the extremely cold temperature required to store and transport Pfizer's vaccine. Malaysia will get its first 1 million doses between January and March of 2021.
The Philippines announced an agreement on November 27th for 2.6 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine and may buy another million shots. Those shots will only cover about 1% of the country's 108 million people. It is also seeking 20 million to 50 million doses from Sinovac, the Chinese company, and is in talks with others, including Pfizer.
Indonesia is testing China's Sinovac vaccine. It plans to vaccinate the country's health workers and other high-risk groups in January 2021. The most populous Southeast Asian country has agreed to buy 125 million shots from Sinovac and 30 million from Novavax. It is also in talks with AstraZeneca and Pfizer to buy 50 million doses from each. And it expects to get 16 million more through the COVAX program.
A Vietnamese government official said its agreement with COVAX would cover only 20% of the population. The country is looking at vaccines from Russia and other countries to meet demands.
Bangladesh signed an agreement with India's Serum Institute to buy 30 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine. It also expects to receive 68 million doses at a lower cost through the COVAX program, a senior health ministry official said.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. When we are struggling, when we have a hard time focusing, or when we have a hard time in general, we may turn to others for help. We may even wish we had a hero to help us. Well, today we offer you some advice. Turn yourself into your own hero. That is the idea behind Kendra Levin's self-help book, The Hero Is You. When you make yourself the hero of your own life, Levin suggests, you not only gain focus, but also purpose. To date, The Hero Is You has been translated into Turkish and Russian. Levin based her idea on the teachings of American professor and writer Joseph Campbell and his hero's journey. Campbell studied stories from many different time periods and many different cultures. He found that many stories had something in common: a hero who goes on a journey. On this journey, the hero overcomes a great challenge and then comes home changed for the better. Making ourselves the hero in our own story, Levin explains, helps us in many ways. For one, it can give us hope, as stories often do.
I think that's one of the reasons that we love stories. We love to read books. We love to watch movies and TV shows. We love stories because stories are all about hope and the belief that after something bad happens to you, you get some value out of it.
In stories, writers often give their hero, the main person in the story, a purpose. Levin suggests we do the same for ourselves and identify our purpose.
That it's important and valuable for all of us to see ourselves as heroes on a journey. And the reason for that is that we need to have a sense of purpose. We need to have a sense that what we're doing matters and that it's leading towards something.
She says this can be a powerful tool for anyone facing a difficult time. Levin shares similar advice on the website Psychology Today. Levin is a book editor and life coach. She uses this method with struggling writers and artists. Levin also has used her teachings with people in jail or facing possible jail time. She observed that when these people saw their experiences as part of a story, it was easier for them to see a better future for themselves.
It's really important and valuable to use the hero's journey as a tool for seeing yourself as a hero and seeing this moment in your life as just that, a moment, rather than this is just how life is going to be forever.
In stories, heroes also have a mission, what they want to accomplish, and a vision, what they see for themselves. Levin suggests that we write out our mission and vision, not just for a project, but for our lives as well. With a clearly defined mission and vision, events in our lives no longer feel like separate events. They become a part of our larger story.
There's just a lot of value in having a mission and a vision. So a mission meaning kind of like, what is your goal? What are you trying to accomplish? And you could have a small one and the long-term one. You know, you could have more than one. And then a vision. What do you see for yourself? What do you see that's possible? And I think that can really help people to stay focused on what they're trying to accomplish.
Levin explains that when we know our strengths, we can use them fully. In difficult times, we can make our lives easier by focusing on our strengths. It is even more important, she adds, to identify weaknesses. All heroes have them. On their journey, they face their weaknesses and learn from them.
And the more we know about ourselves and the better we understand ourselves, the better we can figure out what to do to make the most of who we already are.
Levin reminds us that the hero's journey is not a one-time thing. It is a journey you are on your entire life. So she suggests having small goals that you can measure in some way. This is especially helpful if you have a large goal like learning English.
And that's very much the case with something like learning a language. You're never really done. So to feel a sense of accomplishment, it's so important to kind of break it down into some smaller pieces.
And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the late 1800s, white Americans expanded their settlements in the western part of the country. They claimed land traditionally used by American Indians. The Indians were hunters, and they struggled to keep control of their hunting lands. The federal government supported the settlers' claims. It fought and won several wars with Indian tribes. It forced the Indians to live on government-controlled reservations. Larry West and Steve Ember tell about the people who settled on the old Indian lands after the wars.
After the Indians were defeated, thousands of settlers hurried west. Some hoped to find new, rich farmland. The soil they left behind was thin and overworked. Their crops were poor. Some simply hoped to buy any kind of farmland. They did not have enough money to buy farmland in the East. Others came from other countries and hoped to build new lives in the United States. All the settlers found it easy to get land in the West. In 1862, Congress had passed the Homestead Act. This law gave every citizen and every foreigner who asked for citizenship the right to claim government land. The law said each man could have 65 hectares. If he built a home on the land and farmed it for 5 years, it would be his. He paid just $10 to record the deal.
Claiming land on the Great Plains was easy. Building a farm there and working it was not so easy. The wide, flat grasslands seemed strange to men who had lived among the hills and forests of the East. Here there were few hills or trees. Without trees, settlers had no wood to build houses. Some built houses partly underground. Others built houses from blocks of earth cut out of the grassland. These houses were dark and dirty. They leaked and became muddy when it rained. There were no fences on the Great Plains, so it was hard to keep animals away from crops.
Settlers in the American West also had a problem faced by many people in the world today. They had little fuel for heating and cooking. With few trees to cut for fuel, they collected whatever they could find. Small woody plants, dried grass, cattle and buffalo wastes. Water was hard to find, too. And although the land seemed rich, it was difficult to prepare for planting. The grass roots were thick and strong. They did not break apart easily. The weather also was a problem. Sometimes months would pass without rain, and the crops would die. Winters were bitterly cold.
Most of the settlers, however, were strong people. They did not expect an easy life. And as time passed, they found solutions to most of the problems of farming on the Great Plains. Railroads were built across the West. They brought wood for homes, wood and coal for fuel. Technology solved many of the problems. New equipment was invented for digging deep wells. Better pumps were built to raise the water to the surface. Some of the pumps used windmills for power.
The fence problem was solved in 1874. That was the year barbed wire was invented. The sharp metal barbs tore the skin of the men who stretched it along fence tops, but they prevented cattle from pushing over the fences and destroying crops. New farm equipment was invented. This included a plow that could break up the grassland of the plains. And farmers learned techniques for farming in dry weather.
Most of the problems on the plains could be solved, but solving them cost money. A farmer could get wood to build his house, but he had to buy the wood and pay the railroad to bring it west. To farm the plains, he needed barbed wire for fences and plows and other new equipment. All these things cost money. So a plains farmer had to grow crops that were in big demand. He usually put all his efforts into producing just one or two crops.
The farmers of the plains did well at first. There was enough rain. Huge crops of wheat and corn were produced. Much of the grain was sold in Europe, and farmers got good prices. The farmers, however, were not satisfied. They were angry about several things. One was the high cost of sending their crops to market. The only way to transport their grain was by railroad, and railroad prices were very high for farm products, higher than for anything else. The railroads also owned the big buildings where grain was stored. Farmers had to pay to keep their grain there until it was sold. They said storage costs were too high.
The farmers were angry about the high cost of borrowing money, too. They opposed the import taxes, tariffs they had to pay on foreign products. Some of the tariffs were as high as 60%. Congress had set the levels high to protect American industry from foreign competition. But farmers said they were the victims of this policy because it increased their costs. Farmers, as individuals, could do nothing to change the situation. But if they united in a group, they thought, perhaps they could influence government policy.
Farmers began to unite in local, social, and cultural groups called Granges. As more and more farmers joined Granges, the groups began to act on economic problems. Farmers organized cooperatives to buy equipment and supplies in large amounts directly from factories. The cost of goods was lower when bought in large amounts. The Granges also began to organize for political action. Local Granges became part of the National Grange Movement. Grange supporters won control of state legislatures in a number of Middle Western states. They passed laws to limit the cost of railroad transportation and crop storage. Railroads refused to obey these laws. They fought the measures in the courts. They did not win. Finally, they appealed to the United States Supreme Court.
The railroads said the laws were not constitutional because they interfered with the right of Congress to control trade between the states. The railroads said states could not control transportation costs. To do so would reduce profits for the railroad. And that would be the same as taking property from the railroad without legal approval. The Supreme Court rejected this argument. In a decision in 1876, the Supreme Court said states had a legal right to control costs of railroad transportation. It said owners of property in which the public has an interest must accept public control for the common good. The farmers seem to have won, but the powerful railroad companies continued to struggle against controls. They reduced some transportation costs, but only after long court fights.
The Granges tried to get Congress to pass laws giving the federal government power to control the railroads. Congress refused to act. Many farmers lost hope that the Granges could force the railroads to make any real cuts in their costs. They began to leave the organization. Others left because the economy had improved. They no longer felt a need to protest. Within a few years, the National Grange had lost most of its members. Some local groups continued to meet, but they took no part in politics. New protest groups would be formed in a few years when farmers once again faced hard times. But for now, in the late 1870s, times were good. Most people were satisfied.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.